So, hey guys, welcome back to Accelerated Investor. Hey, it's your host, Josh Cantwell. Today, I'm back with my good friend, Mike Galiba. If you remember, about a month ago, we released a podcast about the entrepreneurial cheat code, and we started talking about some specific strategies for entrepreneurs, not just in real estate, but in other niches, on different things that we've done, we've tried over the last 20 years. It's really worked well for me in my business that Mike is using in his businesses. We recorded that episode. We got a lot of great feedback. Mike, I actually had some people call me and be like, dude, that was like the most transparent, authentic show that we've ever heard because you guys just talked about the journey. So Mike and I decided to come back, record another episode. Just to introduce Mike to our audience real quick, Mike owns a seven-figure digital marketing agency focused on e-commerce brands. And some of his clients have been featured on the Joe Rogan Show, Shark Tank, and in People magazine. Mike is also my former chief marketing officer and a proud father and husband. So Mike, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Awesome, Josh. It's funny. Like I had a couple of people reach out to me too. I wasn't sure what to expect, right? It's like a real estate guy and a digital marketing agency owner just kind of talking about business. I had a couple of people reach out to me as far as from India to tell me like, oh, I caught that on YouTube. It was great. So like, yeah, I'm excited to do this again for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So Mike and I have a couple of concepts we want to talk about today that I think will impact every entrepreneur, whether you own real estate, whether you're in digital marketing, e-commerce, health and fitness. We're going to talk about some of those things and some things that stuck out during my time where Mike and I worked together. We worked together for almost 10 years. We had years where we were pushing $6 to $8 million of top line revenue through our coaching and consulting business through Strategic Real Estate Coach. Today, we use a lot of these same techniques and strategies in my business, in the real estate investments with apartments. Mike is using them and implementing them in his digital marketing agency. And so we thought we would kind of talk through some of these concepts and how we've adopted them in different niches. So Mike, where did you want to start?
Yeah. So in the agency space, like it's very common to just burn your team out, right? It's like constant churning clients and churning team and burning the team out. And the second I started my agency, one thing I learned in working with you is just like how important company culture is. And if you interviewed anybody from that team back in our day, like Todd or Jason or Kurt, like going all the way back, I think everybody will tell you that that team and that culture during that time was absolutely amazing. And I know I feel that way too. We had a lot of fun. Those events that we did were great. And the company culture was always awesome. And you led that. And there are a lot of things that I thought that you did really, really well. And the other day you made a post on Facebook, I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago, you mentioned that, I don't want to misquote you on this. It was something along the lines of like taking care of your team before your customers. Not that you wouldn't take care of your customers, but when you posted that, why did you post that? And what did you mean? And then maybe I could tie that back to some of the specifics about our days in Shrek. Did that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The quote specifically was that most people think that customers are the number one priority. And if you think that, you've lost your mind. Employees are the number one priority because they drive all value creation and all growth in a business. So if you look at like when Mike and I were together, you could say we had all these customers, and we did. We had hundreds, thousands of customers, and we sold these big, giant coaching packages. But a number of the ideas on what to sell and how to sell it and how to fulfill it came from the team. The ways that we wrote Facebook ads, Google ads, the way we built funnels came from the team, not the customer, right? We sold it to the customer, but the value creation, the growth in the business was because we worked on building a successful customer journey, but it wasn't the customer's fault. The customer just opened their wallet, spent the money, and then we hustled our asses off to fulfill that product and make sure they had a great experience. But the customer journey was created and implemented by the employee, by the staff. And so that stood out to me because I was thinking about like, well, what are our next steps? We're in the process of trying to buy another, we have almost 2,000 units of apartments that we're about to buy. And I was at the gym thinking about how that could either, we could totally hemorrhage, right? Taking on another 2,000 units of apartments, unless the staff and the team had systems in place and certain things to create an amazing culture. And so that was where the post came from, was really thinking about the old days, but also thinking about some of these growing pains that we might have because the commercial real estate market's starting to unthaw, and sellers are getting more realistic, and buyers are getting more, everybody's understanding how to underwrite deals again versus just the euphoria and the hysteria of 2021 and 2022. Now it's getting back to the fundamentals and people are being more realistic. So I see the opportunity for us to buy a lot of buildings, and we're a leading player in the Cleveland and the Ohio markets. So we're going to get a lot of these buildings if we want them, but that creates the challenge of growth, right? We grow through acquisitions. We don't grow by creating new funnels like a marketing agency or an e-commerce company. We grow by buying a new building and onboarding 500 more residents, right? And so that's where it came from, was that. And then I started thinking about, like, what about the culture? What about how are we going to make sure that we do this and we don't drop the ball?
So here's a question for you. So you want to buy 2,000 units, new units of apartment complex, and you're the owner. You have an ownership mentality. That gets you really, really excited, right? And then you have this team, and employees and owners are just very different, right? There's nothing wrong with either. It's different. We need each other for sure. For them, it probably feels stressful and a little less exciting, for some of them anyway. So, like, how do you rally the team around that? It's like, hey, we're going to buy 2,000 units of apartments. That's a ton of work. Somebody on the team's probably like, oh shit, like, oh my gosh, he's crazy. Like, how do you get everybody excited around that? And get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I think part of it starts with, first of all, we've had for a number of years now a stated goal that we're going to buy 950 units of apartments per year. That 950 represents, so people understand where that comes from, we make about $1,300 to $1,400 per year per unit of net free distributable cash flow. That's after expenses, after debt service, after we pay our investors. We make about $1,300 to $1,400 per year per unit. So 950 units at $1,300 to $1,400 represents $1.2 million of net free distributable cash flow to us three owners. It's $100,000 a month. So we couldn't think of like a reason other than, hey, adding another $100,000 a month of income for the three of us sounds pretty cool. How do we back into that? We back into, we got to buy 950 units a year. And we might not make that $1,300, $1,400 right away. It might take 2 years of stabilization, 2 years of capital improvements. We finally hit stabilization, and then it's throwing off all this cash flow. So we came up with this 950. It became one of our company names, 950 Management. We own a company called 950 Laundry. So the expectation of the employee is we're going to buy 950 units a year. It starts with that. That's the brand. That's the vision that we laid out for the employees. So when we go say we're going to buy 1,000 units, they're like, that's business as usual for us. Okay, so that's where it starts, number one. Number two is there's reasons why we have to buy more buildings, okay? If we have a great construction company, if we don't buy more buildings that need some kind of value-add improvements, I would have to lay off my construction team. That would suck because they're really good. So my employees also know, my staff knows, if we don't buy more buildings, every building we buy, there's a certain metric where we set aside a certain amount of money per unit that then goes into the construction company to pay that staff. Well, if we just sat on our portfolio and didn't buy anything, we wouldn't have those dollars going into Freeland Construction to pay that team. So we'd literally have to lay them off because there'd be no revenue to pay them. So that's the second thing. So first one is set a vision, an expectation of what we're going to buy. Second thing is kind of desperation that we have to buy the buildings in order to keep this team. And so then it's like, okay. We also know that there's a certain amount of units coming off of the CapEx team because we're hitting stabilization on these other 8 or 9 buildings. Okay. So the construction team can sense that they're not quite as busy. So they actually want us to go buy more buildings. So in a digital marketing agency, an e-commerce company, you can hang your hat on a lot of different things. You can say, I'm going to be really good at Facebook ads. Or I'm going to be really good at YouTube ads. They're very different. Or I'm going to be really good at Google ads. Very different. Or really good at TikTok reels and TikTok shorts. Very different. We decided we were going to be really good at construction. Then the units would rent themselves out. We could have hung our hat on management or property management or said, we're only going to turn the commons. We decided we were going to focus on full renovation of these units. And so you have to pick a platform or pick a swim lane that you can be good at a lot of things, but you have to be great at one or two things. And we decided to be great at construction. And Glenn, my partner, has taken that swim lane, and our VP of construction, Dave, is really good at it. So we decided that we have to be great at that swim lane, which means we have to have units to turn. And so they're now kind of expecting us to buy more stuff because they want to stay busy, right? So those are a couple things I think that are floating through my mind is expectation and vision up front. I didn't always have that vision. We just kind of came up with that about 3 years ago. The second thing is the necessity. Now you know how to feed the beast, feed the machine, which is we've got to buy units to keep these people employed. And the third thing is the construction team knows that's what we've decided. The three owners have said we're going to be great at. And the reason why we decided to be great at it is because we looked at all the other buildings and the owners weren't great at it. It was the number one thing that everyone else was struggling with. So we just, like Mike, you used to say, we're going to zig when they zag. That stuck with me. You used to say that to me 8 years ago. Let's zig when they zag. If they're doing this, let's do something different. That is something that resonated with me that you said that that's what we're doing. We don't see a lot of value at operators who are really good at this construction, this deep construction or medium value add. We hung our hat on that and it's freaking working for us. So those are three takeaways, I think, of kind of why we've done it that way.
Awesome. During the Shrek days, I feel like we were doing the hybrid model, the work from home model, like before it was cool, right? This is obviously before COVID when a lot changed. And our team was really well connected. We met in person like once a week or every 2 weeks, and then we all worked from home and it was awesome. What's your team like now? Are you guys all working from home? Do you have an office?
Yeah, great question. We do have a home office, but there's only four actual offices there. So our VP of construction has an office. Roberto, our CFO, has an office. Stephanie, who's our director of finance and accounting, works under Roberto, has an office. And then Brian, who is our director of construction, works under Dave, has an office. We have a kitchen. We have two large conference rooms that are pretty laid out, but that's it. And the reason why they have offices is because they're in that construction team that we hung our hat on, right? So it leads back to the comment I made before. The rest of the team, the three owners, me, Glenn, and Tyler, we do not have offices there, but we have the conference rooms we can use. Jen, our director of investor relations and investor marketing, she works from home. Sheila works from home. And then our carpenters that are full-time, they just show up on a job site and get to work. So our home office is really only about 10 people. Four of them have offices. Everybody else works from home. But then underneath that, it's a little bit different model because we have a ton of 1099 contractors that either do construction, roofs, windows, siding, plumbing, unit turns, subcontractors. And then the property managers all have an office at our buildings where they have a leasing office. And the property managers, we have probably 50 people in those property management companies that work for us, but they're subcontractors. So each one of those property managers have their own home office, wherever that's located, but then they have a leasing office on site at every one of our buildings. So we have a super small home office team, a super small W-2 payroll, but a huge contracting 1099 team.
For the W-2 home team, how often does everybody get together in person?
Usually only about once a quarter or sometimes once a month. It depends. Me, Glenn, Tyler, and Roberto, we make a point to meet every month face-to-face at the home office, and we go through all the financials of all the apartments. It takes us almost a full day. We go through each building. It takes about a half hour per building, but we also have a construction company. We go through the financials of that. That takes almost 6 to 8 hours to get through all the buildings and all the different companies that we own, the laundry company and all that kind of stuff. And then we'll see each other throughout the month at various locations. Like we'll go walk units together, or maybe we get together to cover something special. But we're on Teams, we're on Zoom all the time, every day.
Okay, so you have a regular meeting cadence where you guys are meeting regularly on a Zoom call, departmental or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And we could talk about that kind of free focus buffer strategy of how we have a certain meeting rhythm. It really starts with me and my schedule that kind of filters down to everybody else. But we have certain meeting rhythms for me personally, for my family, and then for the business that I also think feeds back into the culture that helps us maintain and keep a good culture because people know what to expect.
Are you ready to automate and explode your real estate investing? We're searching for extremely motivated individuals who are sick and tired of wasting time and want to finally see real results from their real estate investing business. We're searching for investors looking to get to the next level and become a bigger, better version of themselves while being a more successful real estate investing entrepreneur. Apply for mentoring and coaching at joshcantwellcoaching.com/podcast. That's joshcantwellcoaching.com/podcast.
Yeah, so the buffer focus in pre-days is something that I learned from you. And I think you learned that from, was that maybe Dan Sullivan that taught that? Tell me about those. What's a buffer day? What's a focus day? A free day is obvious. It's a day free of work, totally. I guess my first question before you go into buffer and focus is, how good are you at honoring your free days?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. Like last week, it was my birthday on Monday. My wife took me out of town for 3 days, 2 nights, rented this suite, actually had its own pool in it. Not just nice. A hotel, but a whole freaking pool. It was awesome. Just me and her. During those 3 days, I literally did not check my email. Then I got home on Tuesday. I was home for about 4 hours. Then I got on a plane and I went to USAB Volleyball Championships in Minnesota. And I did not check my email. So those were all free days for me. It was 7 straight days. I did not check my email. I think part of the challenge with a lot of business owners is they don't get to scale. They don't get big enough that they can create swim lanes where they can have other people own and manage an entire swim lane. Well, I'm very fortunate that we're at scale, 4,500 units, you know, 1,400 units just in the Cleveland area. And so Glenn owns the construction swim lane. Like if I disappeared for 3 months, that would still happen. Tyler owns the property management and asset management swim lane, leasing, evictions, marketing, property management. He owns that. If I disappeared for 3 months, that would still run without a hiccup. Might not have some of the new ideas I bring or some of the questions that I ask, but it would still run. Roberto manages finance and accounting. If I disappeared for 3 months, it would still get done. The property managers are third party. They get paid a fee, a property management fee. If I disappeared for 3 months, it would still happen. That wasn't always the case though, right? 5, 6, 8 years ago, I was very involved every day in everything. Sometimes the team would be like, dude, go on vacation, Josh. Get out of here.
Remember.
Yeah. So I'm pretty good at managing it now, but it's difficult to honor. It's more difficult to honor when you're in growth mode. But even when I was in growth mode, a free day is truly a free day. Like you do not check your email, do not check your social media accounts, do not check your sales stats or your Facebook ads. You do not check your leasing statistics. You are free. And what I found and what I've always said, I got this from Dan Sullivan, was those were the days I got my best ideas because my mind was totally free. And I would just be in my joy, in my fun of hanging out with my kids or at the gym or going for a bike ride at the beach or hanging out with my kids at one of their sporting games. And all of a sudden, the idea would just pop into my brain out of nowhere. Like, where the hell did that come from? But that's a great idea. That's the benefit for an entrepreneur of a free day. Is the fact that you're going to get your best ideas and do your best thinking on those days. The opposite of a free day is a focus day. It's a day where you just do nothing but work, head down, revenue producing activities the whole day. And then a buffer day is where you do things you need to do in business, but that do not create revenue or do not create as much revenue. It's the buffer day is used to set up the focus day. Okay. So basic things like, you know, meetings, finance and accounting meetings, going to the mailbox, picking up checks, doing some finance and accounting stuff. You do that on a buffer day. A focus day for me is talking to investors, marketing, podcasting. It's stuff that generates high-level marketing strategies that generates revenue. So those are the days when I focus on those kind of things. And so that's big. So for any entrepreneur, you have to think about what's focus, what is revenue production? And you have to set aside at least 3 days a week, preferably 3.5 to 4 days a week, but at least three, to just focus on your business and execution, especially if you're in growth mode. Because if you're the CEO, you're still helping the company build. Okay. Then select your free days. Like for me, my Fridays are free days. Like, because Fridays, I want to be away from the company. I want to be outside the business. I want to be above the business. I want to play golf. I want to have time to work out. I want, because I know I'm going to end up having some good ideas on those free days. So I really, my free days are Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Then the buffer days for me are Tuesdays and Wednesdays when I am having meetings with my team, property management meetings, CapEx meetings, construction meetings, finance and accounting meetings. I record a lot of podcasts those days. So that's those are things that I need to do to be around the team to execute, but that's not necessarily making money when we're talking about finance and accounting. We're not making money when we're going over KPIs for construction. We're not making money when we're talking about our leasing metrics. Okay. So that's how it's split up. That's how every entrepreneur should set it up for sure. And I think the only way you can have these free days is that if you create guardrails for yourself. So as a CEO, you have to identify what are your focus days going to be and then trickle it down to the rest of your business. You have to identify when are your buffer day is going to be and then trickle it down to the rest of the business. Like my team knows every Monday is a focus day for me. I'm going to go in the field. I'm going to secret shop our properties. I'm going to show up unannounced. I'm going to walk through the properties and make sure that the top is spinning. And I'm not going to take anybody's word for it. I'm going to get out in the field and I'm going to freaking see it awesome. With my own two eyes.
Yes.
That is key, right? So that's why every Monday for me is a free day. Also, Thursdays is another focus day where I don't have any podcasts. I don't have any meetings scheduled. I can call investors if I want. I can do a special podcast like this with you if I want. I can go secret shop my buildings again if I want, right? Or go see properties in the field, go look at a new acquisition. So all of our new acquisitions, we try to do on Mondays and Thursdays. That's focus. That's revenue production. So for me, it's been about that system I learned from Dan Sullivan in my early 20s. I'm now 46. I've implemented that for nearly 25 years. And I think I've definitely gotten off the rails many times, but I always come back to it. And it always has been working.
That's awesome. I'm getting better. Like I'm still in growth mode and I'm getting much, much better at honoring free days.
For the longest time, like free days to me felt like I wasn't working. I wasn't doing anything, but I did learn over time that like, you're right. Those are really important idea days and just recharge days. So that way I can come back on the focus days and really get to it and work better and be recharged. But I did have to install a couple apps on my devices. Like I have a Mac. On my Mac, I have something called Focus. It won't let me check my email or open my social media or my Slack or any of the distractions. And you can set what it is. Like if ESPN is your thing and you sit down every day and it's a habit loop and you open ESPN, I've got the guardrails in place. I just can't do it. And it's on my phone too. And that's been awesome. And it's, you know, sometimes embarrassing that I have to like babysit myself like that. But like, it comes down to self-awareness. I know that, you know, the dopamine loop, like you've talked about that before. Like if once you get started in that, it's like a runaway train.
It is. And like social media, email, like we used to talk about email and now it's really social. When you get a new like, before it used to be, I got a new email in my inbox. Like, oh my God, it's like a little gift. I want to check it out. And you totally would get unfocused from what you were doing. And now it takes 10 minutes or 15 minutes to get refocused. So you actually use an app. I don't have an app for that. So you're saying there's an app called Focus or some sort of program that actually kind of locks up your computer almost where you can't check these apps or do any of this stuff?
Yeah. And there's two settings. I forgot what it's called, strict mode, I think, but you can make it so like you can't even reset your computer. If you say you're going to focus for this block and you don't want these things on, like you can't do it. And then for my phone, it's called App Block. But yeah, I love them both. And it just, if anything, it's a reminder. Like when I sit down and I try to like procrastinate or go off a little bit and it stops me, it's just a reminder that like, hey, you're here to do something, you know, get back to it. And it's been super useful.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. So one's called App Block for your phone. And the other one's called Focus for your like iMac for your computer.
Yep, exactly.
Oh, dude. Awesome. Thanks for that. I hope our audience loves those ideas. That's fantastic. I remember there was a copywriter that I used to follow when it was, you know, when I was in War Room with Ryan and Perry. Perry would talk about a copywriter that he followed. And I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but the guy wrote copy like all the time. And he would say, like in the mornings, he would work out, he would have this rush of energy. And from like 9:30 a.m. till about 12:30, he could just sit and write. He was like laser focused. He was fresh from the sleeping, he was fresh from his workout. And then he would take like a half hour to 45 minute break. And then the afternoons were totally different. where because, you know, he had this big burst of energy, this big burst of productivity, that in the afternoon, he knew he was not going to be as productive. So he would take a half hour on and a half hour off. He would write copy for a half hour. It could even go to 45 minutes if he was in a zone. But then he would get up and he would literally go outside and walk in his yard or walk his dogs for 15 minutes. Then he would come back, he would sit down, he would write the half hour to 45 minutes, and he would create a timer. And if he was in a zone, he would keep going. But if he knew that he was not in his zone and he was feeling distracted or feeling tired, he would give himself permission to just get up and go do something else. Go get a sandwich, go take a phone call from your mom, go for a, you know, walk with your dog, go whatever, take a drive in your car, and then come back. We're humans, man. Like, we have to learn what is our rhythm that works for us. And although you have hacks, Mike, and I have hacks, it's not going to work for everybody. We're all built different. So I have the same problem with these guardrails. Like, where we have a lot of social media out there, and a lot of, and I'm getting dings and likes and comments all day, every day. I could spend all day effing around with that. And there, it has a purpose for me. We do generate a lot of leads and a lot of investor leads and a lot of money from those media. So you could get just engulfed in it, like drowning in it all day if you don't have some guardrails.
Yeah, you and I have talked a couple of times about perspective, right? Like, when I worked for you, maybe I didn't agree with some of your decisions or saw things differently because I didn't have the CEO perspective. And now that I do, there's a lot of things that I think of and I'm just like, oh, I totally see what he's saying. And one of those, this is just kind of a funny one, but I remember I ran your social media for a while at the beginning, mm-hmm. and I would go into your Facebook account and you would have, like, I don't know, 700 friend requests, right? And I was not, like, I didn't have an audience or a following. So I had zero friend requests. And I was always thinking, like, what kind of person has 700 like unanswered friend requests in their Facebook account? And, like, well, now I have probably like 500 unanswered friend requests in my Facebook account. So I get it now. It's like, you just don't have time for the avalanche. And it's crazy. Like, it's just insane how much email and DMs and LinkedIn requests. It's just madness all of the time. And yeah, it's such a distraction.
No doubt. I think, you know, going back, I think one of the best decisions I ever made was to always focus on having a marketing assistant or a marketing director or a marketing executive above all else. Like, because marketing, like Joe Polish used to say, marketing is sales in print. If you have great marketing, you don't even need to sell. And it's such a huge focus where people get bogged down with fulfillment, or they get bogged down with strategy. They get bogged down with creating funnels and just these different kinds of things. They get bogged down with the operation of the business. I mean, you can have a real crappy back end and still make tons of money if you really have a front-end person focused on marketing and strategy. So even though my marketing now is totally different, we're not really focused as much on creating a big publishing company and selling products, we're just really focused on our portfolio and our mastermind. Still, having someone that leads the charge for marketing to basically manage the managers. Now we have a bunch of experts doing the marketing. And Jen, who's not a marketing person at all, just manages them and makes sure they stay on track on a calendar. She's kind of like a marketing director, if you will. But then she has all these experts that she just, you know, massages that and makes sure that it keeps working. And so we're constantly getting all these Facebook requests, constantly getting all this stuff, but I don't have to communicate with all those people. I communicate with Jen. And Jen says, well, here's what the internet marketing nerds are doing. Here's what Podpost Media is doing. Here's what Julie, the VA, is doing. Here's what Okron Systems is doing for email marketing. And so the other way I think that's really important as you grow your business is to continue to only have three or four or a max of five people, a max of five, that can directly get in touch with you, that are direct reports to the CEO, direct reports to the entrepreneur. Greg and I, when we first built our real estate wholesaling business, it was like me and Greg at the top, and then like 27 employees that all had the same title and the same ranking. So they all just came to us with every question. We were so stupid. Now it's like, I've just got me, Glenn, and Tyler, Roberto, and then I talked to Jen. That's it. And like Sheila kind of works with us in fulfillment, but really Sheila kind of partners up with Jen. But on a daily basis, I really only talk to four or five people. And I think for entrepreneurs, that's huge. You can't be taking arrows from every department and from every employee all the time. It's impossible. You can't scale that way.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's crazy, man. Jen's been with you forever since I was there. I don't remember what her initial role was, but Sheila's been there forever. Roberto's been there forever. Like the team that I was with, I was there for 10 years. I don't know how long Jason was there, but like, I think that's something that is pretty amazing, dude. Like you have a pretty significant longevity in your team. So like, great job on that.
Yeah, thank you. We can get into culture. Maybe we'll do it on another podcast, but I think there's a few things. Man, let's just plan it. Let's put on recording another podcast about culture. And I think one of the reasons why I've been able to keep these folks and have them feel like this is home and they've been producing at such a high level for so long is that one is the meeting rhythms we talked about. So we can do a deeper dive into that maybe on the next show, but they know what to expect. They know certain days that we're going to do certain things. Number two is I understand their personal reasons of why they're working here. Like I know that Jen has had better offers from other companies, but she wants to work from home. And the fact that I can respect that and she's got personal reasons to work from home that works within her family structure is huge. So a CEO needs to understand for as many of the employees as you can, what are their personal reasons and try to create a culture that honors those personal reasons. Okay. The third thing we could talk about again, but I'll touch base on it now is email is evil. I hate email. It's the worst form of communication ever. People are like, well, I'll just send you an email. But then the email ping pong happens back and forth. And that took longer than if you just called me.
That's right.
Right. And then the last one is that CEO has to be outside and above the business so that they can look down upon the business and create and find the holes, the gaps, the challenges, and be able to project the future. You can only do that when you're at scale, when you have enough size. And then it becomes your job as a CEO to make everybody's job easier by creating checklists or by creating rhythms, by creating systems that they can follow that makes their job easier. So those are some of the things I think we can do a deeper dive on next time that will help kind of specifically identify some of the things I think that have created a great culture for us on why, like, you and I worked together for 10 years and Jason was with us for 6 and Roberto's been with me for 15 and Jen's been with me for 8.5 and Sheila's been with me for 16 years. A lot of that has to do with some of those bullet points I just ripped off.
Awesome, man. Well, I know we're getting tight on time, so I still have a ton of other stuff that I'd love to ask you about. And then even like took some notes myself that I'm going to immediately apply to my business. So if the audience is listening and there's something that they would like me to interview you about on like a part 3 or something like that, like I don't know how they can get in contact with you if they leave comments in the YouTube channel or whatever, but
they
like,
can do that. Mike, do you want to give out your like a social media handle of yours, or do you want to like, do you have a company handle? Or well, here's what I'll do. Just email if people have questions. We have an email handle that they can email questions in that Jen will check.
Yeah, and I'll send over my socials like that Jen can put in the show notes or whatever.
And then we can go from there. But yeah, like I'd love to do it again. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. Let me see. Oh, yeah, here we go. So email AIpodcast@freelandventures.com. AI Accelerated Investor, AI Podcast at freelandventures.com. Jen will check that. She'll grab questions, comments from the audience, and then we'll set it up for another show. Awesome. Mike, listen, this is so much fun, dude. Next time we get together, I want to start asking you some more questions. I appreciate you asking me.
Awesome,
hopefully it's impactful for everybody. But thanks for joining us on another episode of Accelerated Investor. Guys, always like, subscribe, rate, review. Appreciate all of you guys being here. Mike, thanks so much, man. Appreciate you being
here. Thanks, Josh. We'll see you soon, man.
All right. Take care.
You were just listening to the Accelerated Investor Podcast with Josh Cantwell. If you enjoyed this episode and learned something new, help us build the AI community by leaving a review and 5-star rating on our iTunes podcast channel. Also, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss another episode. To see passive investing opportunities, visit freelandventures.com/passive. To start your journey toward the lifestyle you've always dreamed of with multifamily apartments, apply for one-on-one coaching with Josh at www.joshcantwellcoaching.com.